Welcome to, yes, we're live, as opposed to dead. Marcus, how are you? Marcus Lane is here. Let's hear it from Marcus Lane. The world applauds. Greek Club, and we are reading in 2 Corinthians 11, and we are at verse 21. This is a section in which Paul is sarcastically comparing himself to people that he calls false apostles there in Corinth. And he's sort of berating, if I could say it that way, he's berating the Corinthians for putting up with them and for remaining distant from him. Again, it's an interesting problem. I may have mentioned this. Some people actually think there's such a... of course, we're reading very slowly, but if you read 2 Corinthians quickly, there's such a marked change of tone from chapter 9 to chapter 10. And then it gets, in a sense, more strident, you know, 10 and 11 and 12. So there are theories out there, actually, that 2 Corinthians 10 to 13 is actually essentially the sorrowful letter that Paul wrote in between canonical 1 Corinthians and canonical 2 Corinthians. Now, I don't think those views have ever become dominant or anything like that, but it is interesting. Chapters 2 through 7 and 8 are all filled with consolation and reconciliation and things like that. But now we get this very, again, sarcastic, confrontational Paul that we've been experiencing in the last few weeks. So
he wasn't just in a bad mood?
Well, apparently Paul wasn't married, he says as much. And no, he's not just in a bad mood, but he is sort of pulling out all the stops. So, for instance, verse 20 and 21, to get a running start, we did this last week, but to translate just sort of quickly, for you bear with it, supply it, after on ekestai there, if someone enslaves you, if someone devours, supply you, if someone takes, probably in the sense of takes advantage, if someone is lifted up, in the sense of being arrogant, if someone beats you into the face. I am speaking according to dishonor, Paul says. Now, I kind of stumbled last week over this hos hati, and so I had to look it up. I had to figure this out. And actually what I found that Blas de Brunner Funk suggests that it's just the equivalent of hati. They call it unclassical. I don't know if that's an insult or what. But so we'll just translate it as if it were hati. I am speaking according to dishonor because we have been weak. Asthenekamen is a perfect from astheneo. And again, this is ironic. Of course, Paul is not saying we've been weak and we shouldn't have been. What he's trying to get them to see is that apostolic greatness and Christian greatness is not the way they're defining it. You know, that's what he's trying to get them to see. So he's about to speak as someone who is beside himself. And that brings us to the second half of verse 21. So maybe we'll just pick up there right where Nestle Aland breaks the paragraph. Let's see. Maybe I'll read 21b and 22. So, en ho de an tis tolma, en aphrosine lego, tolma kago. Hebraioi eisen, kago. Israeli taisen, kago. Sperma Abraham eisen. Guess what he's about to say? Kago. Right. So, back to the beginning of the paragraph then. But, put de in front of the en ho, and the epsilon has been elided there. But, in connection with whichever someone dares. Tolma'u means to dare to do something. So that's kind of a wooden translation. You take the relative pronoun there with the on to mean whatever. So a little bit more of a free translation might be something like, if someone dares, to boast about something, then parenthetically, in foolishness I am speaking. Now resume the thought. Tolmo is just, it's an alpha contract verb that explains the circumflex. So that's just a present indicative active first singular. I also dare. Kago is kai plus ego, kind of slammed together. So somebody wants to dare to boast, I can boast. That's kind of what the force of it is. And then these short clauses. Asin, of course, is just the present indicative active third plural of the linking verb, eme. Question, are they Hebrews? Also I, right? Are they Israelites? Also I. Are they Abraham's seed? Also I. And he's going to continue in that vein. I don't know if Paul intends any distinction here. You know, are these subcategories? Is a Hebrew different than an Israelite somehow? Or is he just sort of piling up categories, you know, in a sense, credentials, say, and Paul showing that he has all the credentials that they have and more, okay? And so I don't know as he's necessarily making a distinction between what it means to be a Hebrew or an Israelite or Abraham's seed. So again, short, punchy, rhetorically, probably very powerful. It's interesting. I was reminded again at the SBL meeting last month that, literature, of course, in the ancient world is performed orally. And so you actually have to practice, you know, and there's no punctuation, there's no breaks. And so whoever read this letter to the Corinthian churches actually would have practiced his delivery, you know, to be able to read it well and effectively. Yeah, Kyle? Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, perhaps it really has nothing to do with the meanings of it, but just the fact that he has a nice rhetorical number of three.
Well, it might be a rhetorical move, right. Right, you're right, that's possible. Yeah, he goes on with a fourth element, which he then sort of fleshes out with a whole bunch of datives, if I can say it that way. So. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, right. Yeah, it could just be a kind of a storyteller's rhetorical move. Yeah. That would be interesting. I don't know how common communicating in threes is in cultures. You know, it's like on your mark, get set, go. Does anybody know anything about that? Ben, you spent time in Asia, right?
Yeah,
but not familiar necessarily with that. So, yeah, do other cultures pattern things in fours, for instance? I don't know. So. Is this a proof of the doctrine of the Holy Trinity? No. So, no. You'd like it to be, but it's probably not. Good. Other questions on those verse and a half? Okay. All right, let's just keep going, and we can get, all of verse 23. Diakonoi Christou eisen, paraphronon lalo, hyper ego, en kapois perisoteros, and philakais perisoteros, and plegais hyperbalantos, and thanatois polakis. So another question, are they Christ's ministers or servants? I had to look up this one. Paraphroneo means to be beside yourself. It literally means to think beside yourself. You know, para means next to, and phroneo means to think, and it means to be out of your mind. See, so it's a participle. It's a present participle active, masculine singular nominative, and the referent is the I buried in lalo, which is from laleo, which again explains the circumflex. So we've got paraphroneo and laleo. So you could take the participle causally. Because I'm out of my mind, I'm speaking. In other words, it's nuts to talk this way, but you guys want to play this game? Okay, I'll play this game, right? Are they Christ servants? Because I'm nuts, I'm speaking. Now, hyper, I was hoping this was true. It can actually be an adverb. The lexicon suggests that maybe only in the New Testament writings is this found, although there were some other possible examples in Liddell and Scott. Normally, it's a preposition, right? which can take either the genitive, in which case it means on behalf of, or if it takes the accusative, it means above. See? But here, it's probably just an adverb that means even more. Hyper, as we would say, right? Even more, I am Christ's servant. That's the point. And now, I mean, and here's the proof of it. I suffered a whole bunch. See, that's actually the proof that Paul is more a servant of Christ than they are. That is to say, the pattern of the Christian life, and especially here of the Christian apostle, is a cruciform pattern. See? There's actually an interesting book I read. It's written by a Presbyterian author whose name escapes me, but it's called The Crucifixion of Ministry. Andrew something. It's an interesting title. It wasn't as good as I was hoping it was going to be, but it was pretty good. I liked the title. So, okay. So we have to supply I have been. Now, en kupois. Kupos is labor or work. In labors, more abundantly, perisoteros. Note the adverb ending just added on to the comparative adjective. In jails, more abundantly. In beatings, a plague is a blow, like you strike a blow against someone. In beatings, hyperbolically. Notice again, Paul is just creating adverbs here by putting omega sigma on the end. And then, this is kind of an interesting phrase, in many deaths, polakis means often or many or something like that. And to be honest, I don't know if anything particular is meant by the fact that Paul has thanatois, deaths. Thanatos is singular, means death. So maybe many times in danger of death or something like that. Put that on your self-evaluation tool. For the district presidents, right? Well, actually, they'd read it. They go, man, this guy wants to be a servant. I'll take him. I'll take him in my district, right? So, yeah, because that's what the district presidents are looking for, are servants, right? So, syntactically, not that hard. You just had to look up some vocab. So, questions, comments on verse 23? All right, we'll keep going. Verse 24, hippa yudaion, pentakis tesserakanta paramion elaban. I'm just going to keep going here. Tris erab disthane, hapax elithasthane, tris enauageza, nichthemeron ento bitho pepoieka. We'll stop there before we get to the endless datives. Verse 24 then, hippa plus the genitive, of course, expresses personal agency. So by Jews, pentakis is an adverb that means five times. And then tesserakanta is simply the number 40. And para plus the accusative can have a number of meanings. It can mean everything from alongside of to other than. It can mean contrary to, like in Galatians 1. There's a couple of times where it probably means the gospel contrary to what we preached. And here it actually means less. So from the Jews, five times, 40 less one I received. Okay, and this is a reference to being whipped. 39 lashes. There was a limit on the amount of corporal punishment that could be administered. Somewhere in the oral tradition, probably. So that happened to me. And then verse 25, tris means thrice, three times, right? The verb is from rabdidzo. You might remember that a rabdos is a staff. Anyway, rabdidzo actually means to be beaten with a rod or a staff, and apparently most people take this as a reference to What are those guys called? The lictors, I think. The Roman city officials that carried, yeah, they carry the bundle of sticks with them, and if you get out of line, they beat you with them. You know, kind of like faculty member here, you know, similar to that. And so Paul says three times, and by the way, we have at least one reference to this in, what is it, Acts 16, when Paul, remember, he cast the demon out of the slave girl, and they beat him up and throw him in jail, and then there's the famous Philippian jailer incident, you know. But he's actually beaten, and he shouldn't have been because he was a Roman citizen. So this is from just Rob Didzo, and it's kind of a classic form. You double the row for some particular reason, but it's you see the theta eta at the end, and so it's just an aorist indicative passive, first singular. So three times I was beaten with rods. Hapax means once. This is a great word in Hebrews. Here it just means one time. Elithosthenes, from lithadzo, which means to stone. And you can see the textbook pattern there with the augment and the theta eta stem of the aorist indicative passive again. Three times, tris. Now I'd look this. This is from now ageo, which means to means to suffer shipwreck. Okay, and it's a weak aorist. Yeah, this is not your common vocabulary. Yeah, yeah. How many times does this occur in the New Testament? Probably once. Probably here. I didn't look it up, but I mean, I did look it up. That's the point. I had to look it up. But you can see, again, it's from now ageo, and so it's just a classic textbook form. The temporal augment on the front, right? The epsilon contract verb, when it leaves the first principal part, the stem epsilon lengthens to eta, and you add the sigma of the weak stem, and then the weak stem alpha. It's believe it or not, it's like elusa. It's the same pattern as luo, the pattern verb. So three times I was shipwrecked. Now, this is kind of a fun word. Who can guess what this means? And you can maybe guess if you take the theta out. The theta is like glue joining two words together. Yeah, for a day and a night. See, you see nook, which is close to nooks, which means night. And then hameron, which is close to hamera. So it's an adjective that means day and night, and this is used adverbially. Neuter, singular, accusative. So, for a day and a night, en to bitho. Bitho means depth or deep. So, in the deep, I have done, if you did it woodenly, pepoieka. I have, you might translate it, I have experienced being in the deep for a day and a night. No wonder that at the end of his career, Paul writes from jail, I'd rather depart and be with Christ, which is far better. I mean, there's no health insurance here. There's no retirement plan. I mean, can you imagine? Well, actually, he says at the end of Galatians, don't give me any trouble. He says, I bear on my body the marks of Jesus. That's what he says when he's feeling a little macho. So, and it's true. So, yeah, so this is just relating all these apostolic hardships. So, okay, questions about that. Actually, it's kind of, I thought, gee, these are kind of textbook-looking forms. You know, once you figure out what the root is, it's not too bad. So, okay, you ready for datives? These are called the datives of infinity because they go on forever. Verse 26, yeah, my goodness. I'll just read till I get tired here. Hodoi poriais polakis, kendunois paramon, kendunois le stone, kendunois ek genus, kendunois ex ethnon. That sounded like a Dr. Seuss, actually. Kendunois en pale. Oh, do you think he's talking about dangers? A kendinos is a danger, by the way. Kendunois en hemeria. Kendunois en thalasse, kendunois en psud a delphois. We'll do 27 as well. Kapo kai mochtho en agripnias polakis en limo kai dipse en neusteis polakis en psyche kai gymnateta. So, just translate probably in. A hadoi poria is a journey, right? You can see hadas in there and probably poriuomai. So, polakis again means many. In many journeys. And then kindinas means danger, and it's dative plural all throughout here. So, dangers of rivers. Of course, the way to remember what potamos means is remember that a hippopotamus is a river horse, right? Thank you very much. In dangers of bandits, lestai. Dangers, I couldn't figure this out at first until I got the next phrase. I think this probably means from my race. Genos is a race. And I think it's in contrast to the Gentiles. So I think it's actually translated dangers from Jews sometimes. So in dangers from race, literally, dangers from Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the desert or a deserted place, dangers in the sea, dangers in connection with false brothers. Verse 27, in toil, and makthas means exertion or hardship. In sleeplessnesses, many, many sleepless nights, probably. In limo, famine, and thirst. In many fastings. In, now this fooled me, all I could think of was psyche, but it doesn't parse right. This is actually the adjective psychos, which means cold. Yeah, so in cold and gymnateta, nakedness. See, these are all this is not all. This is a litany of the apostolic hardship. And Paul is about to say that he's eager to boast in his weaknesses. And then, you know, he'll circle back around and come back to that thought and develop it more fully and more famously in chapter 12 when he talks about the thorn in the flesh and that whole thing. But that's where he's going with all of this. But in the meantime, it's just what? Dative of reference? You know, 500 datives of reference in a row is what we've had there for a couple of verses. So, let's see. Maybe we'll stop there because he shifts thought a little bit. Maybe I'll anticipate verse 28. I had to look this up. Apart from the outside things, par ektos means, among other things, outside of or except. And I think he's shifting from external trouble to internal trouble because what he's about to say is, apart from those outside things, notice how he just puts the article on par ektos. He epistasis. Epistasis means pressure. Okay. There is pressure to me that which is according to day. This is the so-called distributive use of kata. Day by day, there is to me pressure. And what is that pressure, verse 28? The care of all the churches. See? So it's interesting. He's moving from that trouble to the burden that he carries as an apostle, so internally. Okay, so that gets us to verse 28, and we'll pick up at verse 29 next week. So.